Your story is waiting for you today. Your story has something new to say. But your story will only come out to play when you're alone. Alone. Alone in a room with invisible people.
The following episode may contain swearing. Alone in a Room with Invisible People is brought to you by hollyswritingclasses.com. Hi, I'm Rebecca Gallardo, and this is Alone in a Room with Invisible People. I'm here with author and teacher Holly Lyle, and today's topic is criminally annoying characters. This sounds like a fun one. Before we get into the topic, we're going to talk a little bit about either the topic or what's going on. So, Holly, why don't you start?
Okay. This week, we're doing a Splinters class, and Splinters means exactly what it sounds like. It pokes you in places because there are typos. It's written very quickly. The class is how to write a novel. But the advantage of a Splinters class is that people are going through the class as I am writing the lessons. And we had this great question, and the question caused me to realize once again that not everybody thinks the way I do, not everybody comes up with ideas the way I do. So the question allowed me to create a supplement of alternative methods to creating story ideas. And I think that's just really cool. And if I were trying to pre-build the entire class and then have everything done and then put it out in front of people, the class would not have this adaptability that it has going through right now. And, you know, Becca has mentioned that this is a way that people get to influence the direction of the class. And right from the very start, people are influencing the direction of the class and making sure that I am able to meet their needs in writing the novel.
Okay. Yeah, because you might not think like Holly, you might not use the same techniques or the same words to trigger something in your brain.
Right.
So if you're going through something and you don't understand where she's going, the Splinters class is the best place to learn in a way.
Right, because I will adapt things. I will figure out different methods by which you can get to the same place because that's just what I do. That's the way my brain works.
It's just awesome. So was there anything else?
Yeah. Oh, yes. I came up in The Owner's Tale, which I am still working on, but I am getting there. I came up with this absolutely awesome direction in which my two other characters, the main characters in this story are the owner and then Melly and Shay, who have this romance. And I think I mentioned last week or a week, maybe 2 weeks ago, that the conflict, the big conflict there is that Melly is going to say, okay, Shay, it's either me or the owner. And Shay is, and I got this just beautiful storyline of how to present this problem in the best possible way. And there is a certain amount of stuff that falls out from under your feet when you're writing a first draft, where you have an idea, it's awesome, and then you have a better idea, and the better idea moves, you know, within limits. The better idea causes some of what you were planning to do before to drop away, but in doing so, it gives you a stronger take on your theme. And that's what this does for me, is that there is this really deep theme running all the way through the entire 6 episodes of the Longview series. And this one click that I got helped me to understand where even the idea that I had a couple of weeks ago on Shay and Melly could be made stronger and deeper and richer and more compelling. And I didn't lose too many words. So that I am very grateful for.
Yeah, not losing words is a good thing.
Yes. The character that I am dealing with right now that is the most annoying to me is Melly, who I love. I love Melly. She is a great character. And every time I turn around, she keeps changing the story on me. She keeps changing her responses to things. She keeps going in directions I need her not to go, and then showing me why those are the right directions and how, but I need to tell the story I need to tell. And about half the time, she is pulling me towards different stories, and it is just driving me up the wall. So that's my annoying character story for this week.
Well, for me, basically, I have been looking at the characterization of certain people in Leaving Wanda Lucia, still trying to... I have an antagonist, and this episode falls at a good time for me, because the antagonist right now is supposed to be pretty scary. But when I've been writing out his bio, but oh my goodness, this guy is coming out so annoying. It's amazing how in your head, and I think he's gonna have to be shot, fired and shot and killed and burned and tossed aside, because now it's just stuck in my head who he is. But he didn't come out the way that I wanted him to. And actually, I might not shoot him. I might just save him for an annoying real estate agent or something. Just somebody who's just beyond obnoxious. Maybe my muse just wanted to annoy me, or maybe my muse just wanted to write this really, really obnoxious character. But oh my God, there's just nothing to him. He's not... I can see where I could build upon to make him obnoxious, mm-hmm. to make him intentionally annoying and somebody that the character or that the reader would love to hate, but he is not the person that I wanted to create at all. So hopefully that will help us segue, because, you know,
yes,
maybe he'll be worth yes. something. So that's pretty neat. We've already got two annoying characters, two completely different kinds of annoying characters. Yours is Melly, who is a great character that you love, who's acting annoying like a little brat, and mine is a horrible, obnoxious, flat paper person, as we talked about last week. I definitely need that shirt. Paper people suck. Even though it makes me think of Dunder Mifflin from The Office. The paper people's people. I don't remember what their thing was, but
oh God,
it's paper people suck. So yeah. So Holly, why don't you give us, you know, different definitions of or what is a criminally annoying character? Where does it spawn from?
Okay. Well, there are, first off, of course, it's never simple. There are first off two categorizations of annoying characters. The first is annoying for the writer. And the second is annoying for the reader, because many, many characters that writers just love, readers just hate. And many, many characters that readers just love, writers come to hate. Sherlock Holmes being one of those characters. But if we're going to break this down into two sections, which is we're going to go with annoying for the writer first, because you're the one who has to live with the story. You're the one who has to show up with these people in your brain all the time, and you have to put them on the page. And if they are annoying you, that's a problem. It does not make your workday fun if your character is routinely annoying you. I'm having a bad week with Melly.
But it's not like since conception, she's just been this huge monkey on your shoulder.
No, Melly is one of my favorite characters I've ever written. So she is just fun to write. But, you know, this week, anyway, if you have characters that are annoying for the writer, you then have characters who wreck the plot, which is Melly. They try to redirect the story. They change.
That would be mine.
Yeah. They change into someone else, which fortunately she isn't doing. She is being very much herself. It's just, oh my God. So anyway, as I was talking to Becky, all of a sudden I realized what Melly is doing and why she was annoying me. And oh my God, it is the solution to a problem that I have been having since the very first episode, and it is her being a pain in the ass that made me stop and look at her behavior. And just here right now, I got the answer, And it is such a cool answer. And now I don't have to be annoyed at Melly anymore. Yay. So anyway.
That's amazing.
It is. Oh, my God. Okay. So sometimes characters who are wrecking your plot are doing so because you are missing something really important that needs to be in the plot. And the second you figure it out, they stop being annoying. It's like they're standing there in the middle of your story, waving their arms up and down, making faces at you, jumping up and down, going, "Yo, moron, you have missed something." And then you go, "What did I miss? Oh, okay, so that just happened. All right." Okay, the other thing, they change into someone else, and then they keep doing dumb things. And I have a little story about a character who kept doing dumb things. I was writing a story with Steve Sterling, and it was one of his main characters. We were doing a collaboration, and it was one of his bigger characters. And the character kept doing dumb things. He was doing them when Steve was writing him, he was doing them when I was writing him. And one time he did a dumb thing where he stood up and got his head shot off while I was writing him. And I just went with it. And I had never done any fan fiction or anything. So, and collaboration was a new thing for me. I didn't know you're not supposed to kill off people's characters. So I killed off this character. And then I wrote to Steve and I said, "Okay, this is what happened." He says, "No, that's okay. That's okay. We can go with that." He was kind of, he was doing dumb things. So
that's funny. That's pretty cool.
The next thing that annoys writers is characters who don't show up for work. And this is, you sit down to write them and they either won't tell you who they are. And oh my God, I get this complaint from writers so often. It's like, "Well, you know, I came up with this really good character, only I don't know who he is. He won't tell me who he is. He keeps sitting there and just looking at me, and I want to write about him, but I don't know who he is." And then the other one is they won't tell you why they matter. You know, they'll tell you all of the details about their lives and what they look like and what they like to eat for breakfast and who they like to be friends with, and but they won't tell you why they matter to your book. And I don't know, have you ever had anybody like that show up in a story?
Yes, yes. I've had the protagonist that was in, he was supposed to be very private and very kind of blocked off and centralized, you know, but went a little too far, and I tried a whole bunch of different ways to get him to interact, and it took me a while, but I finally got him to come out. And then I've had the person that is just keep popping up, like the annoying kid in school that just follows you, or a little brother that just won't leave you alone, just keeps coming up and keeps popping up and wanting to be in every scene, and it's irritating because mm-hmm. you don't need them everywhere. But they're a little drama queen attention whore.
Yeah. Yeah.
kind of like Andy from The Office. Again, I'm in the office mindset this week. I don't know.
I only saw one episode of that show. It didn't quite grab me right. So
yeah, the British version is amazing, and then when you first start watching the Office, the American version, mm-hmm. the first whole season is a little off.
Okay.
Because especially the first episode. But if you can get into the second season, it's pretty good.
Cool.
Then it goes downhill again.
Okay, so those are things. One thing that I have found with mysterious characters is that if you create a character that you want to be mysterious to the reader, that's cool. That character cannot be mysterious to you.
Nope.
No, you have to know that character. And we have some fixes for this. Some of them are very simple fixes. But the third kind of characters that are just criminally annoying to writers is characters that you didn't hire who start running the show.
Oh, hey. my character I just mentioned.
Yes, yes. You're annoying drama queen.
And you're slut with the red
shoes. Oh, my God, yes.
Right? Yeah.
Yes, yes. The hot redhead FBI agent who appeared out of nowhere, hijacked the story, and cost me 60,000 words twice on deadline. Anyway, they cause insurrections among the other characters, or wherein you have somebody who your other characters have all been this really great team. They've been working together with you. They've been giving you plot ideas. They've been getting onto the page correctly. They've been doing cool things. And then this one character comes into the story, and all of a sudden the other characters go on strike It's like, we're not going to work with that character. That character's a jerk. That character wants to just steal all the scenes. And this happens. This happens. I think it happens more. The more fluid and fluent you get with your writing, the more relaxed you get with creating story, and the more your right brain and your left brain, they're just clicking back and forth, and all of this stuff starts flowing for you, so you are much more susceptible to having...
I don't know. I think a lot of people are going to be in the opposite when you're a newbie.
Really?
And you don't realize that your problem might be plot-related. Or conflict related, and then you're like, I just need a new character.
Oh, and then, okay, bam.
So yeah, I mean, there's that professional kind of, I've been doing this for a long time. I'm looser. I don't need to plot everything. I can feel when my muse is giving me something good, or so you think. And then you also get the, there's something missing. I'm not as experienced. Yeah.
Thank you. Because that's, yeah.
Well, that's where I ended up with one of my criminally annoying characters that did the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, that's a really good point. I haven't, again, this is why we do this. Yes, it's because your perspective and my perspective are very different sometimes, and that's a really good thing. Yeah.
Yes.
So yes, because I had forgotten about the solve the problem by adding a new character fix.
Yeah, and there are other reasons that a newbie would, or not newbie necessarily. You can be a newbie, you're not new. Intermediate.
But.
Yeah, but yeah. There's all sorts of reasons why you didn't create a new character. But yeah,
right.
So what? How would you find out which one of the characters it is? I guess some of them are pretty obvious. And then also, how do you fix these things?
Okay, well, as mentioned with my FBI redhead, sometimes the fix can be pretty drastic. She was just destroying the world I was building, seriously, she was wrong in every possible way. And she started out being so cool and so enigmatic that I followed that trail, you know? But I shot her.
Murder.
I did. I eliminated her from my story. I cut that 60,000 words that she was in and just dumped it. Didn't use it. And then I cut the ghost parents subplot that I put in instead for the same reason. I was having a problem with that book.
So with these characters, though, like, okay, so I'm assuming that to find what they're doing, then it would be, so for your redhead, you would pay attention to what the characters are doing. So right. For your redhead, for instance, she is dismantling previously created relationships.
Right.
She
was the second book in a trilogy. And she broke the world building that I did for the trilogy. And you have to understand the story that you're telling. If you're just, if you're pantsing, you're kind of screwed. Because if you don't know to some degree the story that you're telling, it is going to be damn near impossible to identify the character that is breaking your stuff. But if you have some sort of a concept, even a single sentence concept for your story that explains what you want the story to be, protagonist versus antagonist in setting with twist at about 30 words will get you there. And if you can look at that, and then you look at this character, you just go down your list of characters and you say, okay, is this character moving my story in that direction? Yes. Okay, that one gets to live. Is this character moving my story in that direction? No. This character is trying to tell another story. Okay, so you have two options at that point. You can just destroy the character, which I did with the redheaded slut because she was just awful. But you can also find that your brain is trying to build two separate stories at the same time. And if you extract this character that you have created that is just wrong for this story, that character will be awesome for another story. And I have gotten really good characters by doing that. It's just
You have to know what the character, and I guess the safe bet is just extract them. If you don't know if you need to shoot them or extract them, just extract them, and
right.
Just you either save. Use them later or you don't.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. I still have that set of 60,000 words with the redhead, and I still have that set of about 60,000 words with the ghost
parents.
Yeah. because in my case, I was using them as a demo for a class, but it was not that I ever wanted to write them again. But save the stuff you cut, because it may come in handy someday, and nothing you ever do is wasted. And that goes for writing, even your crappy writing, even the stuff that you miss and mess and screw up. It might be something that down the road you'll wish you had. And for those of us who have been doing this for a really long time, it is almost certainly something that you could look back on if you still had it and use it as demos. And, you know, the fact that I moved from Windows to Mac, I had lost just a bunch of stuff on Windows. But the stuff that I moved from, that I hadn't lost and moved from Windows to Mac, I still have. So, yeah.
So you're still looking at change into somebody else, keep doing dumb things. Those two kind of fit. So how would you, and I mean fit together, like how would you fix those two things? Because they seem like obvious problems when you're reading over your scenes trying to find the problem. If somebody keeps changing on you or somebody keeps doing stupid shit that you don't want.
Right. If they keep changing on you, sometimes you just need to go deeper into the character and make sure that you really know who this person is. And that requires sitting down and doing a character interview where you ask questions, you ask the character questions, and the character answers you in first person, tells you, this is who I am in that voice. I am a doctor. I am interested in science and physics, and I am this person, and I want these things out of life, and I fear this. And at the point where you have talked to the character, sometimes you can get the character to calm down enough and stay the same that you can figure out how to write this person. But the default, if it is screwing up your story and you cannot get the character to talk to you for whatever reason, is shoot them. Because there are a zillion other actors out there who will show up for the part. And
so that's really a good line for all of them, for characters who don't show up for work, for characters who you didn't hire.
Yes, that is your...
That start ruining the show.
Yes, that is your default solution. Shoot them.
Okay, so the default solution is, you know, shoot them or extract them for another story.
Mm-hmm.
And really the other version is to dive deeper into the character and try to figure out who they are.
Right.
And try to maybe figure, like, you could ask yourself questions again, like what you say. Always ask yourself questions.
Right. Is this character somewhat... Will this character tell you why he matters or she matters to the story? If you ask the character point blank, okay, what are you doing in your story, in my story? Why are you here? What do you intend to accomplish by the end of the book? The character has to be able to answer that question. And if the character can't answer that question, then that's a really good reason to fire the character and find somebody who has a purpose to be, or just to say, okay, well, that character didn't need to be in the story in the first place, and leave that whole blank and just go back to the characters who actually have a job to do.
So some reasons for being in the story would be for smaller characters would be to be atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd cut them down a whole bunch.
Oh, yeah.
They would be somebody that carries a theme, or maybe, you know, the opposition to the point of the theme.
Right. They demonstrate the wrong way to go about something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or they are there specifically, like the old lady with the bags from the previous episode that I had talked about, with the to prove that the character that helped her with her bags was not a complete and utter asshole.
Right. Sometimes they are there to prove that you are serious and that the stakes that your main character faces are real. And this is called the whiff of death. And sometimes that character is just in the story so that they can get killed. And after you have made the reader like them, and after you have made them demonstrably someone important to the main character, then you kill them so that the reader goes, oh God, I thought they were going to be the best friend. Or, oh God, I thought they were going to be the love interest. Or, oh God, and they're dead. Are they really dead? Are they dead? They're dead. Oh no. We are evil bastards.
Yeah, that's if you read a Song of Ice and Fire, the Game of Thrones, one of the main characters, one of the point of view characters.
The guy who you think is going to be there to the very end.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And George R. R. Martin kills him off pretty early on.
Way early.
And you are devastated.
Yeah.
You are just like, are you kidding me? And there was this foreshadowing in the very first scene of the book,
mm-hmm.
where if you read it, you should realize maybe nobody's safe.
Yeah.
But yeah. So we've got the annoying for the writer. And is there anything else you want to cover before we go to the annoying for the reader?
No, I think we've pretty much got it there.
Okay. So let's talk about the annoying for the reader characters.
Okay. Characters who are annoying for the readers fall into two classes. Characters that they cannot identify with, which means that the wrong readers found you. Or characters that they identify with too closely, which means that you might have to move. Oh, there's a third characteristic. There's a third one. Or the Mary Sues, both male and female. And that is characters where they have identified the issue that you identify too closely with this character and have made the character perfect. So with those, characters that readers cannot identify with mean that the wrong readers found you, but you have to understand that this might be a point to a larger problem, in that sometimes the characters that your readers cannot identify with are miserable, mean, cruel, and they're supposed to be the hero. Or sometimes they are supposed to be your bad guys, and they are all turned into sweetness and light by the end so that there is no conflict at the end, and you have softened your story by pulling your punch. Sometimes it's that they cannot identify because it's just they picked up the wrong book.
I like the fact that you mentioned that the characters change.
Right.
Because a lot of times, and this is something you see in TV shows a lot, when they've run past, I guess you could call them their prime, or maybe just the writers are, they're not refreshing their minds or maybe not getting new writers. It's the same with a lot of things is that the characters... either they don't grow, they don't change, their arcs don't change, or they don't have arcs, and that can be annoying.
Mm-hmm.
Or they become caricatures of themselves.
Oh God!
They get to the point where certain arcs were finished off earlier on in a season or a series, and then the character is aimless.
Right.
They have no clear definition, and all of these characters change into people that you no longer like, and that are not who you identified with, who you loved. They're no longer the people that you love. And that is a problem in a lot of television series. And it is something that follows in books as well.
It is. It is. And the fix for that is hard. The fix for that is that you have to understand what people loved about the character initially. You have to identify that core of who the character is, and you have to keep that character, that core of the character, while still allowing the writer to, or the while still allowing the character to grow and change. I think the person who did this best to me was Robert Parker with his Spencer novels, in which you meet Spencer when he's this young kind of hot ladies man, and then he grows, but he is this honorable man who wants to right wrongs. And he grows into a relationship with a woman I couldn't stand, but he falls in love with her, and they have this...
Yeah, the lettuce eater.
Yes, the lettuce eater. Oh. And he falls in love with her, and their relationship lasts for the rest of the series. And also, he gets older, and things, the beatings that he takes earlier in his series have repercussions later in the series. And so he changes, and he becomes deeper and more compelling as a human being. And he also becomes more sympathetic, a little bit less flip. He has this great friend, a guy named Hawk. He has this just long-running life in which terrible things happen to him and terrible things happen to other people. And he is still, at the very end, a man who wants to make things right. A man who wants to make things right. A man of honor and integrity who wants to help people survive.
It sounds like that would be a lot more fun to write and a lot easier to write than something like the Nancy Drew series, where the kids all stay the same age.
Yes.
Or maybe I wasn't thinking of the Nancy Drew. Is that kids?
Yeah, that's okay. I read those ones about 12, 13, so like early.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of different novels out there or series in which people don't necessarily grow older.
Right.
So you would think that would be very difficult to continue to write with any depth. I like the idea of a character growing but always maintaining their convictions.
Right, and always having the possibility, the real risks of destruction, that if you have the same cast in every story, then people know that there is no risk. The whiff of death does not exist. And that makes writing that series very hard to sustain. Those series generally end up being written by teams of people who are given...
Yeah.
Yeah. And they show it.
Yeah, there's a lot of books and TV series, too, where they have that, what you call bulletproof cast your How to Write a Series. And after a couple of seasons, like I can even say, like with The Flash and Arrow to a lesser extent, but mostly The Flash, it's just gotten horrible because everybody is bulletproof. Everybody's arcs are gone. There's, It's just this mindless kind of sea of cheesy bad guys and bad one-liners and bad jokes and no real conflict, no real risk. Because you already know everybody's in places where they keep killing the characters and then the characters keep coming back.
Right. That destroys your tension.
Joss Whedon did it pretty well. But other than that.
Right. Well, there was, with Buffy, there was more going on there.
Yeah. And characters did actually die.
Right. Right. Yeah. There were consequences. Yeah. And the final season and the final episode, he tied it all together and made it beautiful. And that was a series that got pretty rocky in the middle, but that came back together at the end.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that is starting to focus. He even said in an interview about Firefly that the characters, when he was working on Firefly, the characters for Buffy and Angel had gotten so lost in their own mythos. That he didn't know what was going on, and he had to go back in and had to work his ass off to start to repair the damage. So that's right. Another thing too is getting lost in this kind of drama and mythos, and especially the drama. A lot of books and shows will fall into that soap opera feel, even though it's supposed to be something else.
Right. It falls into, and the soap opera feel was the perfect phrase for that. It is the situation where if anything can happen, nothing matters. If somebody can come back from the dead and after having a brain transplant and falling off a cliff and being electrocuted, drowned, and burned, and having their head cut off and buried in a separate thing, and they show up in the next episode. That is, if anything can happen, then nothing matters.
Yeah.
And nothing matters. You just killed your story with that. So sometimes...
Or the evil twin brother.
Oh, God, yes, the evil twin brother.
The amnesiac after 20 years comes back. Yeah, it's...
Yeah.
If anything can happen, nothing matters. And that really is true, because the reader will stop caring.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so that is a way that you can annoy the reader badly. The other thing is, okay, so that's characters that readers stop identifying with or can't identify with from the beginning. The second is characters that they identify with too closely. And this is that you have written someone who appeals to a niche audience that is... Like the Bella vampire thing, Twilight.
Yeah.
And it the audience is defined by their love of the character. They have similar characteristics. And you can't move past that, because if you change this tiny little box into which you have put this character, then all of the people who identify with the angsty, self-absorbed, narcissistic teenage Bella are going to lose interest, because what they identify with is the fact that somebody loves her in spite of everything that she does wrong. The fact that she does not make herself worthy of love. She is loved because she is flawed.
A lot of people don't see it that way, but that's
no. How I know this is too. Me as a writer, and I'm, yeah. I do understand that this is my opinion after having read the book and dissected it and gone no.
And again, that's something that you're going to run into as a writer, is people are not going to like your work, and they're going to dissect it, and they're going to have valid reasons for not liking your work. But that doesn't mean that those are reasons that fit you or your readers. They're not valid to you guys.
Oh, hell yes, because, you know, the success of that book is proof that there is a huge audience for it. It's just, it wasn't me.
Well, it's like you mentioned in, I think, two or three episodes ago, that you have been given a lot of flack for writing female characters that are too strong. Well, mm-hmm. They're not too strong to your people. They're not too strong to the people that this, you know, strong females matter. If strong females matter, then your protagonists are going to matter.
Yeah, I write strong females who like and get along with men. and right at the moment, that's terribly unpopular too.
Yeah.
So, but that's what matters to me. So that's who I write. And there is a, you know, decent segment of readers who want that. So what matters to you is what you need to write, again. And if you have characters, Stephen King, a lot of writers have had problems with characters who identify too closely with their characters, of readers who identify too closely with their characters and who show up at their doorsteps and become unnerving in their desire to get close to the person who made the people, with some interference with their lives. But that is not most readers. Most readers are really cool. And most times, if they identify closely, that's a good thing. That's what you want. It's just, you don't want to idealize something really bad and say, you know, this terrible person is the hero, because the people who identify with that character as a hero are going to be your fans. And you have to really consider that. Is this the people that I want to, you know, be riding up and down in an elevator with at conventions or whatever? Yeah, that's always a good question to keep in the back of your mind.
I think it just comes down to making sure you're writing characters that you would hang out with or that you would like, or that you kind of think are ideal people. Not perfect, not flawless, but just if your main characters, if the hero of your story is a person that you believe has integrity and conviction, then, you know, and good integrity and conviction, somebody who follows the same kind of ideals that you have, then that shouldn't be a problem.
Right. You need to get the readers you want. You need to write the characters you love, the characters who matter to you, and write the characters you hate as the villains, and show why you hate them, and have reasons that are valid to your characters, to your heroes, for why the villains are wrong for them.
Yeah.
I mean, or why the villains are different than the heroes. I have a class, you know, how to write villains, because most people anymore don't really seem to understand what a villain is. So that's one of the things that there were a lot of people who were very excited about that class and found it kind of eye-opening as they went through it. It's like, oh.
Yeah, I need to go through that one too, because maybe that will help with my criminally annoying real estate agent, broker, douchebag, boring guy. I cannot say enough bad about this guy. It's like, dude, you're supposed to be this really super creepy guy, and you're coming off like a GQ model, like, you know, one of those just guys standing there. I don't know. It's so
plastic
hard.
Bob.
Yeah, it is. It is basically a Ken doll with a smarmier look than Ken ever had.
Oh,
and I mean, he's almost like God, I forgot his name. In Harry Potter, he was the person who wrote those books that had all of these stories. The really dashing smile and the wavy hair that all the women loved.
Oh, yeah, I remember him, and I can't remember his name either. I detested him.
I cannot believe I cannot freaking remember his name. I've read those books I don't know how many times. But, yeah, he's he looks like him. He kind of comes across as him, and he has this...
Probably has the Ken doll smooth area.
Yeah, he's just... It's just bothering me that this is who... So I'm going to extract this character. I've decided... But, you know, it took the episode. I'm going to extract him and for sure definitely put him in there as somebody else that is taken down. Because I really loved Lockhart.
That's it. That was Lockhart. Yes. Nice job.
But there was some really, really good conflict in there. Because it was this version of this person that the world sees. And the real person that was there, and this idealization of this person that is supposedly this hero and this all this great things, but when you pay attention to his actions, there's something amiss. And
yes,
maybe
now well, that was a very good character.
Yeah. So
yeah,
actually, oh my god.
Uh-oh, you just got a story idea, didn't you?
No, I just solved the problem, and this guy is going to be in this book.
Oh yeah, so that's. You and me in this episode each getting a problem, solving a problem we're having with a story character.
Yep.
This is I like this episode. This is useful.
This episode's been good for us.
Yes, it has. Oh, okay. And I'm at this moment while you're writing your stuff down, I want to add a little disclaimer here. We are not bagging on the writers of the books we are discussing because these are writers. Or the shows. Yeah, either. These are shows that have huge followings and have earned them. They have appealed to the people who love them. And that is entirely legit. And your readers are going to be the people who find what you create connects to some part of them where they needed a connection. And whatever you write, that's okay. That's you are going to get the readers you work for and that you have earned. But the whole bagging on thing, that's bad. You know, and I don't want to do that. I play Destiny, and you know, the bagging is essentially tea bagging, but somebody who has shot you five times and you finally get them once, so you go over and jump up and down on them and do the tea bag, or the female version, which is called the clam slam. And you know, that's poor sportsmanship. We are using examples that most people will recognize because they are so big. that you don't have to go through and look for this tiny little esoteric book. You can find out who Buffy the Vampire Slayer is. You can find out who Snape is in The Deathly Hallows and all of the other J.K. Rowling stories. You can find Stephen King. You can find the people who have done it right, and you can find the people who, you know, to me personally, I am not their reader. To me, they did it wrong.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that objectively they did it wrong. Obviously, they didn't, because they found readers.
Yeah. It's the same thing with The Office, with the way that I felt that it derailed. And a lot of people felt that way. But there's a lot of people that loved the last seasons of The Office, that thought they were the best seasons. And while I strongly disagree, they have a right to their opinion, and a lot of them can voice why they felt it was better. The good thing for you as a writer, too, is if something like this happens, it's unfortunate, especially if it's like your favorite show or your favorite book or whatever, but it's something that you can go through and dissect. You can start to try to figure out, okay, where did this go wrong? Why did it go wrong? And rewatching The Office now, like I said, this is kind of like The Office is on my mindset or my mind, but rewatching it now, I'm paying attention to how the characters start to fall or falter or change, how the stories got too goofy, too far-fetched, too weird, something like that. I try to look at why I liked the original parts, how they brought it back later, where they went wrong, all that sort of thing, and I learn from it.
Right.
But I'm not, I don't intentionally mean to bag, as Mom says, bag on anybody, because I'm just looking at it as, this failed for me, why, and how, what can I learn from it?
Exactly. Your job as a writer is to read things you love and to read things you don't love, and to understand why you don't love the things you don't love and why you do love the things you do. What is it that one writer did that connected tightly with you? What is it that another writer did that turned you off? You have to understand that it's what characters did they make? What techniques did they use? How did they tell the story? What kind of an ending did they give it?
Why did you love those characters so much? What about it? What about those characters? Since this is about characters, what was it about them that you identified with or that moved you? Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah, and so that's your job as a writer. It's not just to write. Your job is also to study, to observe, to understand, to dissect what other people have done that really matters to you or that really doesn't, so that you have this way of connecting your own work into the genre that you're writing and understanding where it fits and who's going to want to read it, based on what matters to you, and how you will learn what matters to you by seeing what matters to other people and where it doesn't connect.
So I think, is there anything else you want to say before you go ahead and wrap it up and give a takeaway to our readers?
I think let's go ahead and do the takeaway.
Listeners. To our listeners. Yes. So go ahead and give us the takeaway then.
Okay, the takeaway for this is very short. It is, first off, if you have a character who is giving you problems, or a character that you have come to understand is giving your reader problems, or your readers, we will assume more than one, you need to first interview the character. Find out why the character is in your story, what the character's objective in your story is, why this matters, why you care, why the reader should care. And the second is to always hold in reserve the fact that firing the character or shooting the character is an option, and it is frequently the very best option you have.
Now, firing or shooting the character is the same thing as extracting, correct?
Yes.
Okay, because I know a lot of people, and this is something that maybe it's just noobs, maybe it's just intermediates, a lot of people create these characters, and whether they're annoying or not, we have this attachment to where we say, well, mm-hmm. I created that. I can't just kill that off and not remember it and not have, because it might come use. And this just could be just a pack rat hoarder kind of mentality that I have. And a lot of, you know, I know a lot of other people are pack rats too, and they want to save everything. So,
right. Well, no, that's actually a very normal thing, is that especially when you're new, you assume that if somebody showed up for your story, it's because they belong in the story. It isn't. Many times it's because the somebody who showed up in your story is an actor who's out of work, who is trying to finagle his way into a job, whether he can act the part or not. So you are, as the writer, a casting director, in which you are looking at, does this person fit my story? And if this person doesn't, well, you can politely fire them. If they insist on shoving into the story and inserting themselves where they don't belong and where they are wrecking things, then you shoot them. And, you know, both of these are nonviolent options in that, well, I mean, you can kill them on stage or on screen in your story. You can just take care of business by having that be the person who dies horribly, and readers will cheer.
or
perhaps cry. But
was it Monty Python and the Holy Grail where they killed the bard and they were happy about it?
Brave, brave, brave Sir Robin.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
So, okay.
And then turned and bravely ran away.
Yes. I love that movie so much.
I do too.
So is there anything else before we wrap it up then?
No, that is going to be it for this week. I think that
I thought that was... It was good for both of us for sure, because we both solved problems.
Yes, major story problem for me. Major.
Yeah, major story problem for you, because it goes back to episode one.
Yes.
As always, you can follow us on the socials. We are on Facebook, Alone in a Room with Invisible People. We're on Twitter and Instagram at AIARWIP. You can also use a hashtag, search the hashtags for Alone with Invisible People or Alone in a Room with Invisible People. And we have a website. It is alonewithinvisiblepeople.com, where you can find today's show notes and leave some comments. But we actually have a new area for our Alone with Invisible People, Alone in a Room with Invisible People listeners. And that is, if you want to take the discussions further, if you have some private ideas, if you have some story problems that you don't really want to share in public, you can take it to the private forums at hollyswritingclasses.com. And you'll have to create an account if you don't already have one, but we are going to have an Alone in a Room with Invisible People forum.
And yes, and the account is free.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's a free account, but we do have, we don't have anonymous people coming in and writing stuff. That's why you have to create an account. We don't, you know, it's a private forum. So, and Holly is very, very protective of her people. So when you get in there, we're going to have each individual episode listed out, including the mini episodes. So if you have any comments or questions, or you're frustrated about something, or you want us to dive a little bit deeper into something that we mentioned, just go ahead and post on the forum. You'll get, you know, other people can also talk about the same subject. You might get moderators, you might get different people's opinions on these different subjects. And who knows, you might actually be able to influence a future episode based on different things that you guys are discussing in there. So we would love to have you in there.
Yes, we would.
Last but not least, we are coming up on the end of our Flash Fiction contest. So we are going to remember the deadline. If you haven't listened to the episode, the deadline is October 1st. I'm not going to give you a whole bunch of information, but you have to listen to the episode, Why Write Flash Fiction, to get the information. And then, of course, if you want to email us, we are at show@alonewithinvisiblepeople.com. Is there anything else, Holly?
That does it. And I think just write and kick ass and have an awesome time. And we'll see you next week.
And now a word from our sponsor.
You want to write, you love words, you love fiction, but you don't know where to start or how to middle or where to finish. I do. I'm Holly Lyle, and I've been doing this professionally since 1991. And I know how I did what I did to go pro, and I'll be happy to show you what I've learned. Start with my free 3-week flash fiction class at hollyswritingclasses.com.